Herzlich willkommen zum YouTube Creator Podcast, meine YouTube Story. Heute melden wir uns mit einer Sonderausgabe von der Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz. Ich bin Ralf, ich bin Sprecher von Google und YouTube in Deutschland und ich habe die Ehre und Freude, euch heute vier wirklich außergewöhnliche Persönlichkeiten vorzustellen. Wir sprechen über deren Arbeit auf YouTube und insbesondere über ihre Erlebnisse hier im YouTube-Studio auf der Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz. Lasst uns direkt loslegen. Meine erste Gesprächspartnerin ist Viktoria Reichelt von Die da oben. So heißt euer YouTube-Kanal. Herzlich willkommen, Viktoria.
Hallo, schön, dass ich hier sein darf.
Fangen wir ganz einfach an. Was machst du hier bei der Sicherheitskonferenz?
Ja, ich darf dieses Jahr für YouTube und die Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz im YouTube-Studio ganz viele verschiedene Leute interviewen. Es waren auch deutlich mehr, als ich dachte. Also das ist ein ganz schöner Durchlauf, aber man lernt natürlich in einer ganz kurzen Zeit ziemlich viele spannende Leute kennen.
Wir sind hier im YouTube-Studio im Bayerischen Hof. Beschreib doch mal kurz unseren Zuhörerinnen, wie es hier aussieht und was hier passiert.
Ja, das ist ganz witzig, weil ich finde, das YouTube-Studio hier auf der Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz ist wie so eine Art Kontrast zum Rest vom Bayerischen Hof. Hier ist alles ganz hell und lichtdurchflutet und sehr, ja, sieht alles sehr, sehr jung aus und YouTubig quasi. Und der Bayerische Hof, also das Hotel, zeichnet sich ja dadurch aus, dass alles sehr, sehr eng ist und die Menschen sich dicht zusammendrängen, was ja auch Sinn der ganzen Sache ist, weil so begegnen sich natürlich Führungspersönlichkeiten, Regierungschefs, Chefinnen, die sich vielleicht sonst eher aus dem Weg gehen. Genau, aber ich habe das Gefühl, wir sind hier so ein bisschen so eine kleine Wellness-Oase. Das merkt man auch immer, wenn die Leute aus der Konferenz hier so reinkommen und sagen, ach, hier ist ja so viel Platz und hier sieht es ja so schön aus und kann ich mal einen Kaffee trinken. Genau.
Wie ist das Studio bisher gelaufen für dich? Welche Interviews mit welchen Persönlichkeiten haben dich besonders beeindruckt?
Ja, also es ist super gelaufen bisher. Ich habe ja gerade schon gesagt, es waren unglaublich viele Interviews. Ich würde jetzt mal, ich habe gerade keine genaue Zahl im Kopf, wahrscheinlich so 12 gemacht oder so. 11, 12, keine Ahnung. Im Kopf geblieben ist mir auf jeden Fall das Interview mit Robert Habeck, mit Vizekanzler und Wirtschaftsminister Robert Habeck. Das war natürlich spannend, weil das einfach ein wahnsinnig interessanter Zeitpunkt gerade ist, mit dem Vizekanzler zu sprechen, aufgrund der geopolitischen Lage. Dann hatte ich aber auch ein ganz tolles Interview zum Beispiel mit einem indischen Energieexperten, Mr. Taneja. Und das fand ich auch wahnsinnig spannend, einfach auch mal die Perspektive von jemandem aus dem Global South zu bekommen. Und diese Perspektive ist oft eine andere, als wir hier im sogenannten Westen oder im globalen Norden haben. Und ich glaube, unter diesem Stern steht ja auch so ein bisschen die Konferenz, dass sich da gerade einfach geopolitische Machtverhältnisse ändern und alle irgendwie einen Umgang damit finden müssen.
Du bist ja nun eine erfahrene Interviewerin und YouTuberin und auch teilweise beim Fernsehen tätig. Aber die MSC ist vermutlich auch für dich was Besonderes. Da kommt eine amerikanische Vizepräsidentin, läuft vorbei. Der ukrainische Präsident kommt mit sehr viel Security-Leuten um ihn rum. Der deutsche Kanzler läuft dann eben mal durch. Wie ist es für dich?
Ja, also ich finde das einigermaßen absurd und abgefahren. Also ich habe schon damit gerechnet, dass man wahrscheinlich sehr viele prominente Politiker und Politikerinnen sieht, mit denen ich mich da natürlich schon ganz lange befasse, aber viele davon, gerade auf dem internationalen Level, habe ich noch nicht in echt getroffen. Ja, und dann kommt man da vielleicht irgendwie mal so von der Toilette und dann läuft Nancy Pelosi vorbei, die gerade ein paar Salzbrezeln isst, oder Hillary Clinton steht in der Ecke. Und genau, meintest du ja auch gerade schon, dann läuft Herr Zelensky nochmal vorbei. Also es ist wirklich eine unglaubliche Taktung an sehr, sehr, sehr einflussreichen Menschen, die alle in diesem Hotel irgendwie rumwuseln. Es ist total abgefahren.
Was möchtest du mit deinen Interviews von hier im besten Fall erreichen?
Ich möchte mit diesen Interviews hier eigentlich genau das erreichen, was ich auch sonst mit meinem Journalismus erreichen will, nämlich jungen Menschen Politik vermitteln, verschiedene Perspektiven vermitteln. Jetzt hier im Rahmen der Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz natürlich vor allem verschiedene Perspektiven auf internationale Politik. Und das auch vor allem in einer Sprache machen, die junge Menschen verstehen, die sie interessiert und vielleicht auch mit einem Zugang mit Fragen, die eher aus ihrer Lebenswelt kommen, als das vielleicht andere klassischere Medien tun.
Auf eurem YouTube-Kanal, die da oben, da schreibt ihr, im Bundestag ist Feuer drin, aber kaum einer bekommt mit, was sie da oben so treiben. Und das wollt ihr ändern.
Ganz genau.
Wie gut gelingt euch das?
Ich würde sagen, das gelingt uns ganz gut. Das kann man vielleicht so ganz unheitel mal sagen, weil wir natürlich verstehen, was sich irgendwie junge Leute angucken, gleichzeitig aber einfach ein Politikverständnis haben und auch wissen, was die Stellen zum Beispiel aus Bundestagsreden sind oder so, wo wir mal sagen, das muss jetzt mal raus aus diesem Kosmos Bundestag. Wir packen das jetzt mal auf die Plattform, zum Beispiel YouTube, die ihr euch eh reinzieht. Und dass es funktioniert, das sehen wir eigentlich schon seit Jahren, auch mit steigendem Interesse, weil irgendwie alles politischer wird, ne?
Wie wichtig sind solche Formate auf YouTube? Dass ihr habt ja auch Kolleginnen und Kollegen, die Ähnliches machen, aber wie ist da deine Sicht drauf?
Das ist super wichtig, weil wir ja ganz klar an den Zahlen sehen, dass junge Menschen, und da nehme ich mich jetzt mal noch mit rein, gar keinen Fernseher mehr zu Hause haben. Das heißt, gängige Nachrichtenformate, Polit-Talks, die linear laufen, die haben natürlich im Moment immer noch eine Riesenquote und sind genauso wichtig oder sind natürlich auch wichtig. Aber wir sehen ja einfach, dass sich das Mediennutzungsverhalten von jungen Menschen so krass ändert und wir sie einfach da abholen müssen, wo sie sind. Und das ist eben auch auf YouTube. Und ich glaube, dass YouTube ja ein unglaublich breites Angebot hat, ne? Von Lifestyle-Themen, Food-Content, Fashion-Content. Da gibt es ja unglaublich viel. Aber dass eben die Politik auch da stattfindet, das ist unglaublich wichtig.
Ihr macht den Kanal ja, glaube ich, zu dritt. Habt ihr da euch jetzt schon eingespielt? Gibt es einen Rhythmus, in dem ihr sozusagen produziert? Kannst du vielleicht ein bisschen erzählen, wie ihr arbeitet?
Ja, also es ist ja ein Funkkanal, also vom jungen Content-Netzwerk von ARD und ZDF. Und wir sind natürlich nicht nur die drei Leute, die man auf dem Foto sieht, sondern da steht eine Redaktion hinter, die den ganzen Tag eigentlich arbeitet an verschiedenen Verticals, also Shorts, an so einem großen Weekly-Video, was so einmal die Woche kommt. Ne? Das sind dann so 10 bis 20 Minuten Video zu einem aktuellen politischen Thema. Parallel dazu hängen wir natürlich alle auch noch ganz viel am Handy und gucken, was gerade noch so abgeht, weil wir da sehr reaktiv und sehr schnell auch sein wollen, weil darauf kommt es ja oft an.
Hier in München hast du ja auch andere YouTube-Macherinnen kennengelernt, drei KollegInnen sozusagen aus unterschiedlichen Ländern. Habt ihr euch mal ausgetauscht? Hattet ihr überhaupt die Zeit zwischen all den Interviews und was nimmst du von den Gesprächen mit?
Wir haben uns auf jeden Fall ausgetauscht, auch wenn es zeitweise super stressig war, weil da ja auch jeder so ein bisschen in seinem Interviewtunnel ist und sich vorbereiten will. Wie ich meine KollegIn wahrgenommen habe, ist auf jeden Fall, dass das alles total krass engagierte, ambitionierte und echt so Arbeitstiere sind. Also fand ich total beeindruckend, wie da wirklich jede Pause genutzt wird, um irgendwie noch Content zusammen zu basteln. Und das hat mir auch einfach nochmal gezeigt, was für eine Arbeit so ein YouTube-Channel auch einfach ist, wenn man vielleicht nicht wie wir auch eine Redaktion dahinter hat, sondern auch sehr, sehr viel selber macht. Ne? Also dann so eine One-Woman-Show ist oder so. Also wirklich sehr beeindruckend, Hut ab.
3 Tage Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz. Was nimmst du jetzt mit nach Hause?
Ich nehme mit, dass jetzt vielleicht ein bisschen eine weirde Erkenntnis, aber auf jeden Fall eine Erkenntnis, dass all diese Menschen, die Weltpolitik machen, die man so aus dem Fernsehen kennt, letztendlich auch nur Menschen sind, weil man sie hier in ganz in nahbaren Situationen irgendwie sieht und denkt, okay, Nancy Pelosi muss auch Salzbrezeln essen, weil sie den ganzen Tag noch nicht gegessen hat wahrscheinlich. Das ist natürlich, ne, also klar, Politiker sind Menschen, das ist eine schlaue Erkenntnis, aber das habe ich jetzt schon irgendwie so nochmal mitgenommen und aber auch, dass ich irgendwie ganz dankbar bin, dass ich da dabei sein durfte und dass so Foren wie dieses einfach wahnsinnig wichtig sind, um weiterhin auf einer globalen Ebene im Gespräch zu bleiben und letztendlich so, auch wenn das nicht immer einfach ist, für mehr Frieden in der Welt zu sorgen.
Vielen Dank, Victoria, dass du hier warst und damit dazu beigetragen hast. Ja, vielen Dank.
Danke für die Einladung.
Bevor ich weiter mit den YouTuberinnen spreche über das MSC YouTube Studio, freue ich mich über einen ganz besonderen Gast, den Vorsitzenden der Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz, Christoph Heusken. Vielen Dank, Herr Heusken, dass Sie sich kurz die Zeit nehmen.
Sehr gerne, das ist ganz toll, hier in dieses Studio zu kommen.
Wir machen das zum 5. Mal, das YouTube Studio auf der MSC. Wie fällt da Ihre Bilanz aus?
Meine Bilanz ist absolut positiv. Wir machen natürlich die klassischen Medienarbeit, Interviews in Tageszeitungen, aber wer liest heute schon so eine Tageszeitung noch, ne? Und wir müssen einfach sehen, wie wir die Botschaften, die von der Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz ausgehen, wie kriegen wir die unter die Menschen, denn das soll ja kein In-sich-Geschäft sein, sondern wir wollen so viel wie möglich Menschen an den Ergebnissen, an den Gesprächen, an den Diskussionen beteiligen.
Die MSC feiert den 60. Geburtstag, das YouTube-Studio den 5. Geburtstag. Wie wichtig ist es für Sie, auch die junge Generation mit den Themen der MSC zu erreichen?
Das ist total wichtig. Vor 60 Jahren waren es etwa gleich 60 weiße Männer rauchend in einem Saal, die intern gesprochen haben über Sicherheit. Das war vielleicht wichtig, aber heute ist was völlig anderes. Die Themen der Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz, das sind Themen zu Frieden, Sicherheit, globale Fragen. Das sind Fragen, die gehen jeden an. Das sind Fragen, wo jeder seinen Beitrag leisten muss. Das sind Fragen, wo auch jeder verstehen muss, wenn politische Entscheidungen getroffen werden, warum sie so entschieden werden. Und deswegen muss man alle Menschen mitnehmen. Man muss die jungen Menschen mitnehmen, denn sie müssen immer mehr Verantwortung tragen. Und sie haben ja auch mit den Konsequenzen dann auch tatsächlich zu leben. Und deswegen, je mehr jüngere Menschen man einbezieht, desto besser. Wobei für uns ganz wichtig ist, auch bei der Konferenz von 60 Männern vor 60 Jahren sind wir heute so, dass wir unseren Podien zum ersten Mal mehr Frauen als Männer hatten.
Ja. Letzte Frage ganz kurz. Wie fällt Ihre Bilanz zur Konferenz insgesamt aus?
Ja, die Konferenz findet statt unter sehr, sehr schwierigen Umständen. Die russische Aggression geht weiter. Wir haben den Krieg im Nahen Osten. Wir haben viele Herausforderungen zum Klima und so weiter. Also das ist schon eine sehr schwierige Umgebung. Aber ich gehe schon mit dem Eindruck weg, es gibt einen Silberstreif am Horizont für alle diese Herausforderungen. Ich hoffe, dass dieser Silberstreifen dann auch trägt, wenn die, die hier an dieser Konferenz waren, wieder nach Hause gehen und das, was sie hier gehört haben, gelernt haben, entschieden haben, umsetzen in die Praxis.
Vielen Dank, Herr Röskin.
Gerne.
Unser nächster Gast ist niemand Geringeres als Dr. Adana Steinacker. Willkommen, Adana.
Dankeschön.
Du bist YouTube-Produzentin, Gastgeberin, hast mit House of Adana eine Plattform gegründet, die Frauen fördert, durch Videos rund um Themen wie Muttersein, Nachhaltigkeit, Gleichberechtigung und Gesundheit. Wie geht es dir heute?
Mir geht es sehr gut. Ich freue mich, hier in München zu sein.
Seit wann bist du auf YouTube und wie bist du auf die Idee gekommen?
Das Interessante ist, am Morgen, am 19. Februar, genau 10 Jahre sind auf YouTube.
Happy Birthday.
Dankeschön. Das ist total verrückt für mich. Aber jetzt, ich habe 3 Kinder und ja, aber sehr, sehr interessant für mich.
Wie bist du zu YouTube gekommen?
Die Idee war total Zufall, als ein Tanzvideo von uns, mein Mann und ich, hat viral gegangen ist. Dann, ja. Ja, viral Video and then we continued.
Bist du dabei geblieben?
Ja.
Wir haben verabredet, dass wir kurz auf Deutsch sprechen, weil du noch gar nicht lange in Deutschland bist. Wie lange bist du in Deutschland?
Vielleicht 5 oder 6 Monaten. Mein Mann hat einen neuen Job gefunden. Aber im Sommer 2014 habe ich in Berlin gewohnt und ich habe an der Charité gearbeitet vor 3 Monaten und also ich liebe Deutschland.
Ich finde, dein Deutsch ist sehr gut, but let us switch into English now.
Perfect.
What are you doing here at the Munich Security Conference?
I have the honor of being one of the YouTube creator delegates. YouTube and the MSC have a strategic partnership with a mission to inform and involve the broader public in conversations about security. And so I am going to be in conversation with a lot of the leaders in politics, NGO, international organization, to get a perspective and bring that to a wider audience on my platform. So it's an honor for me to be here.
What was your personal highlight so far?
My personal highlight as a women's empowerment advocate was really to be in conversation with a lot of the women involved in foreign policy and to really understand the strategies that they are advocating for to involve more women in gender inclusive policies. And so that's a step forward and progress for gender equality. And that's really exciting for me.
How important is it, you think, that somebody like you is here and is making content and interviews for younger generations?
I think it's very important. I mean, we know that more than half of the world's population gets information from social media. And so to bridge this gap between, you know, for the lack of a better word, very serious conversation, and to break it down into relatable topics that is understandable, digestible, and accessible to the broader public, I think that's an opportunity that I don't take for granted. So, yeah, I'm happy to be here.
One of your missions of your channel is to empower women. You already mentioned that. If you look at the conference and the people here at this conference, how much work is still to be done when it comes to empowering women?
A lot, in a nutshell. I mean, the data says it is going to take over 100 years to achieve gender equality, right? So, you know, but progress over perfection, right? So 10 years ago, a conference like this would have looked very different. And, you know, rather than always focusing on the negative, I really do want to highlight the progress that's being made and the access that's being created for women. So that's Freud Mixus, yeah. Yeah.
Another mission of House of Adana is the topic of sustainability. What is your impression? Does the younger generation care enough about all the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals? Do they know enough about it?
So I would say that a lot of it has been unrelatable jargon, to be honest, because when I made it part of my mission to advocate for sustainability, I know that a lot of the questions I was getting from my audience was, what is the SDGs? You know, there's all these acronyms and big words and net zero, carbon neutral, and all the jargon that really a person wouldn't know how to relate to in their every day-to-day life. But that has shifted since involving creators and understanding the role that platforms like YouTube plays in democratizing access to this sort of information, but also leveraging creative voices who have the ability to break down that complex knowledge into actionable steps. Like, the question really is, what can I do in my private life to live more sustainably? So, and this generation really do care about the planet, they care about their future, and they are doing great work in standing up for their rights, no matter how young they are. So it's been truly inspiring to see that shift and to really see boots on the ground, especially from young people willing to take action to make sure that the world is a better place for us to live. So, and I'm happy to be part of this mission.
Wonderful. Tell us a little bit about House of Adana, your channel, and how you developed the channel.
So, like I said, it's been 10 years now, which started off as a very accidental dance video. And at the time, I was in medical school and so didn't understand the need to bring any thought leadership to the channel. I was showing behind the scenes of my life, which I won't underestimate, because that sort of content really did inspire young women to think, I can also be a doctor and I can also raise a family. My life wouldn't be over. And as I graduated medical school, trained to be a doctor, I really started to understand this gap that exists when it comes to women's health and the lack of funding that's available to medical research when it comes to diseases that affect women, I felt obliged and responsible to leverage my platform with knowledge that I had the opportunity to have and the training and the experience. And I thought, well, what better way to bring this relevant information to more people, to empower women to know more about their health. And so that really was the catalyst. Also, one of the values I hold very deeply is equality. And so both racial and gender equality. And so another thing, actually important fact, is looking at my YouTube analytics to realize that more than 98% of my audience are women. So it was a win-win-win situation. And it was a no-brainer that this was the next pivot to use my channel and my knowledge and really just empower women about their health and well-being.
That's a great, impressive percentage. But I think men should also watch your channel, right?
Well, they should. You can tell them. Yeah,
I will.
You can tell them there's
a
channel.
I will do that. You have a family with three kids. You mentioned that.
Yes.
Do they know what you are doing? Are they proud about their mother?
Yeah. So they're proud about their mother. I don't think they have an idea of what I'm doing because they are 8, 6, and 3. But we've had instances where, like I said, in the beginning was a lot of the family lifestyle content. So we've had instances where we've been recognized on the street and people say hello to the kids and the kids are surprised. Why does this person know me? But slowly, as I've taken them away from the channel, I don't think they're old enough to understand the work that I'm doing. But soon enough, they will.
So what do you take away from Munich? What will you remember?
Well, it's two sides of a coin. One is positive, one is negative, right? I think starting with the negative is really not the realization, but really just being in a place like the Munich Security Conference where all the leaders that work in making this world a better place for us are coming to talk about the state of the world. On the one hand, is really scary. I've been in lots of conversations that I've cried. I was in a session with Hillary Clinton yesterday that brought tears to my eyes. So hearing all of the security issues going on in the world is really heartbreaking. But also the fact that the Munich Security Conference provides this platform to have a dialogue and to talk about diplomatic solutions for a better world. I think that's one positive that I want to hold on to, that these conversations are happening. There are activists, there are world leaders who really believe in world peace and making it their mission to make sure that we live in a safer world. That's something I'm going to hold on to. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Anana, for contributing to these conversations and for bringing this also positive message to your audiences. So thanks so much for coming to Munich. Vielen Dank, Anana.
Vielen Dank.
I'm now here with Jack Kelly, the founder of TLDR News, a YouTuber, a journalist, and already for the second time here at the Munich Security Conference. So is it okay if I call you a veteran of this studio?
I think just about now, yeah. I think two times is the borderline.
Yeah.
If I get invited back next year, I'm a real old hand.
So how was it in Munich this time?
Yeah, it was great. I think it was really great to be back again. I think having had the experience from last time, having got the opportunity to speak with people at Munich and at other events with YouTube over the last year, I think we've been able to really hone our questioning, come up with some really great angles to get good answers out of people. And I think, yeah, the guests and the subjects of the interviews have done really well. I think I'm looking forward to seeing how we work it into our content and how we're able to deliver this to our audience.
The world is even in a more difficult state this year compared to last year. So how did the state of the world and, the mood at the entire conference, how did it impact the work here for you in the studio?
Yeah, you're right. There's definitely been a wider scope of topics, I think. Last year, it was clear that although there were many issues going on in the world, the Ukraine-Russia war was certainly the focus for a lot of people. And this year, the number of conflicts around the world, the number of things seeking attention has really meant that there's been a huge array of things people have been interested in talking about. that's been reflected in the content we've been making over the last year. Definitely there's been a change in focus that we're still covering, obviously, what's happening in Ukraine. But equally, there's a responsibility to report on what's happening all over the world. So we've definitely shifted our focus and tried to cover more than ever before. And I think it's been useful that the guests we've had have also been interested in that. So from a mood perspective, I think there is still some optimism. I think we've tried to ask each guest at least one question that leads a bit towards a more optimistic answer. But certainly looking at the world right now, it's hard to see optimism everywhere, I think.
So it's already the fifth time that the YouTube studio is at the Munich Security Conference. How important do you think it is to open this traditional conference to a younger audience globally?
Yeah, I think it's really useful. I think when you're here, you can see there's a ton of important people speaking to each other. There's important dialogues going on. There's the big speeches. But I think having something like the YouTube studio within the building, within the hotel here, in a space that normal media aren't even really allowed, means that we're able to speak directly to the experts, the politicians, the think tank leaders, all these kinds of people who obviously are doing great work in the quiet meetings and in the private spaces. But us being able to ask them questions about what's going on directly in the hotel, directly in the midst of it, I think is super important. And when it comes to young people specifically, I do think the reach that the creators we have here has is very different from some of the other traditional news outlets. And I think being able to go directly to social media and directly to YouTube, I think is hugely beneficial. So I think, yeah, having this here really opens up the dialogue at MSC and allows it to reach people that it might not otherwise.
Let's talk a little bit about your own channel, TLDR News, for somebody who doesn't know the channel.
Yeah.
How would you explain it to him?
Yeah, so TLDR News is now a number of different channels. We have a channel that covers UK politics, one covering EU, one covering global news, one covering business news, and one covering kind of daily news updates. I think the total subscriber count across all of them sits at about 2.7 million at the moment. But broadly, what we're trying to do is we're trying to give people a summary of what the news is. So TLDR, if you're not familiar, stands for Too Long Didn't Read. So the idea is that the news is often too long or too complicated. And especially for new people, younger people getting into news for the first time, I think the hurdle to get into news can feel quite difficult. There can be lots of jargon and lots of complicated language that might make sense if you've lived through politics for a long time. But if you're new to it, if you haven't been paying attention before, I think it's often quite difficult to get into. So the idea of TLDR is that in about 8 minutes, that's the average length of our videos, you get enough information to take you from essentially no knowledge to being able to understand a topic. And I think from people we speak to and audience members, they really do value from that. They really do get value from it, that they are able to, with that knowledge, then either go on and learn more and use us as like a starting point, or at least give themselves kind of an empowering feeling of understanding what the world is going on around them. So that when they are with family at dinner or wherever they are, they can have a conversation and feel informed. So that's really what TLDR is about, helping you learn on your own to be able to build up your knowledge base. And one of the other key things is that all of our news is as impartial as it possibly can be. So we don't have any agenda. We don't have any political bias within the organization. So that means that people don't have to just follow the opinions their parents have or their family have. They're able to form their own opinions with the knowledge we give them.
Yeah, very interesting. Mm. I heard a nice quote yesterday about how younger generations consume news today, which was that this generation cares less about the authority of the source, where the information comes from, but more about authenticity. Would you agree? And is that also part of your spirit at TLDR?
I think you're right. I think certainly over the last 10, 15 years, you've definitely seen this shift take place. And I certainly believe that we try and give some of that authenticity. We're trying to come across as normal people. And I think it's a balance, right? You want some of those larger legacy outlets, obviously, because they provide the journalism and the rigor and the fact-checking and all those things. And certainly at TLDR, we try and replicate that and we try and ensure that our news is as high quality as it can be. But you obviously have to get that balance right because there's certain actors online and elsewhere that aren't always trying to do that, that are just trying to make the most engaging content, regardless of how accurate it is. So I think there's a balance, but when it comes to what we're doing, we're absolutely aiming for authenticity. we regularly put ourselves out there as individuals. For instance, we have a podcast we do every 2 weeks called The Editorial, which all it's about is responding to criticism and explaining the mistakes we've made in videos, because inevitably we will get criticized for things. We will make some mistakes. So every 2 weeks we record a podcast where all we do is respond to that negative coverage, essentially as a way of saying, we won't get everything right, but we are listening to you. And if you think we've made a mistake, we'll answer whether we agree or not. And if we have, we'll explain how it happened and why it won't happen again. So I think there's a real yearning among young people to have that kind of transparency and dialogue with media. And I think often big mainstream outlets struggle with that because it is a bit foreign to be that kind of open and transparent. But I think a platform like YouTube really allows for it, because that is what YouTube is all about. It's about having a dialogue with an audience. It's about building a community. And we're certainly trying to do that with news.
You just mentioned the amazing reach that you have with all of your channels, 2.3 million. So you come into the area of traditional television broadcasters. Yeah. Almost, do you compare yourself with the BBC? Do you want to be the new BBC? How do you see that?
It's a good question. I think we certainly are growing. We certainly are reaching new audiences. I think comparing ourselves to traditional is always difficult, because we still are like 12 people in a room compared to the scale of some of these organizations. I think that's maybe what's kind of craziest about our organization and about what YouTube enables, is that we are able to get more consistent, better viewership than many other professional kind of broadcast TV outlets or newspapers on YouTube. And it's wild that an independent group of people that didn't exist a few years ago, and still to this day is only a handful of people, it's crazy that we're able to get the same reach. And I think that's what's really empowering and exciting about YouTube. Whether I compare myself to the BBC, I'm not sure quite yet. I think we might need a bit more time. But I certainly think that one day we'll be able to reach the kind of scale and the kind of credibility and rigor that an organization like that does.
I think it's a great aim to aim for. So final question. Mm. 3 days of Munich. What do you take back to UK? What are your main takeaways?
I think there's been a lot of interesting conversations we've had that we're keen to share with our audience and to integrate into content. And I think it's encouraging to see those optimistic moments I mentioned, that as a news channel, we're not really trying to just kind of cherry pick good news. I know there's some news outlets online, especially, that like emphasizing good news that kind of expense of reality. And we try never to do that. But I think what we do always try and do is show that there is a hopeful side to things, and show that there is an answer that, or a solution that can be reached. And I found inspiration in some of the answers we've received from the people we've been interviewing and the other interviews we've watched hosted by the other creators, that there still is that optimism and that hope. And what we'll try and do, I think, is to try and bring that forward in our content, use those clips and share that with our audience, to not unrealistically raise expectations, not pretend like everything is okay, but to show that there really are important, intelligent, thoughtful people who are trying to make things better and do believe that there is a more optimistic outcome.
Did you learn any German?
I can't say I learned a whole lot of German. I should know more. I studied German for 5 years at school.
Okay, we could have done the interview in German.
We absolutely couldn't have done it in German. I don't remember much of it, much to my own mother's disappointment. She lived in Germany for a number of years. She speaks fluent German. So she always wished I paid more attention in German class. But unfortunately, I still don't remember all that much of it.
So you can now say bye-bye to our listeners in German.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Wonderful. Vielen Dank, Jack. Danke. Danke für den Besuch in München. I'm now very happy to have Ramina Eskaksay with me. Did I say this correct? Eskaksay?
Yes, it's in Ukrainian, Eskaksay.
Eskaksay. Ramina is from Ukraine. You are a journalist and YouTuber, known for your interview channel, Ramina. You started in 2020 and you do deep conversations with celebrities, musicians, cultural figures, often focusing on social and political topics, and lately often about the war with Russia. And in only a short time, you have reached 1.4 million subscribers, which is a huge number, and nominations for awards. Welcome, Ramina, and a big thank you for coming all the way to Munich this year.
Thank you very much that you invite me. I make my channel in 2012, but I start to make video just 6 years ago.
Okay, great. So how are you this morning?
Oh, I'm fine. It's the last day of Munich Security Conference, and I want to see all videos that we make.
Wonderful. So before we talk more about your country, obviously, tell us, how did you start on YouTube?
So there was not so many bloggers in Ukraine. So there were not many bloggers in Ukraine. And in Ukraine, there is very popular to make interview. And nowadays, it's very popular to make podcasts. So I know that in other countries, it's not as popular as in Ukraine, in Russia. So all life, when I was trying to be on TV, producer said, oh, you're looking good, but we call you later. So I decided to sell my car and start to produce video on YouTube.
Okay, wonderful. You are known that in your interviews, people really open up and really speak how they are, who they are. How do you do this?
You know, when I invite person on interview, I tell for everybody that we should make a good interview. If you don't have mood, we shouldn't make it, because we should make it good, or I can wait. I can wait 1 year, 2 years, but we need to make it good. So when I send invitation, it's my rules. If you want to go to my channel, we should make it good.
Okay, that's a very good rule. So 2 years ago, Russia attacked your country, Ukraine, a moment that we all remember and never forget, obviously, especially the people in Ukraine. How did this moment change your work and also your life?
On 21st of February, I was at Kyiv in my apartments, and my ex-boyfriend told that Russia started a full-scale invasion. And on this day, I was planning to have interview. So I was planning to go to beauty salon and then to head interview. At those moments, I thought, should I wrote to person that I invited on interview that to postpone it? So it was unbelievable that our neighbor started a full-scale invasion. And I thought it's like only for 3 days. I thought that Russian people should gun on streets and told no war, but they didn't do it.
Today on your channel, you report a lot from the war, and you go there where the war takes place. Are you afraid? Tell us a little bit how you do your work there.
On the beginning of a full-scale invasion, I started to do interview with Ukrainians that were in Bucha, in Mariupol, in Izum city. It was a Skype interview. And I told these people that when our military made counterattack, I will go to these territories and I will make a new video report. So the first city that I was visited, it was Izum. And then I started to be on a front line. Then I think most crazy thing was when I decided to make video from Bakhmut. It was 6 months before Russians occupied the city.
And were you afraid? How did you feel there?
It was you know, I'm a bit worried, but I'm not afraid. I believe to our soldiers. So if they told me, you can go, so we make it.
Very brave. Now you're here in Munich. You did interviews. You saw your president, your foreign minister. What was your highlight? How did you like it to be here in Munich?
You know, it's a first time when I saw Zelensky. And I like our foreign minister. And I like work our foreign minister of affairs of Ukraine. So it was a good luck that he found, it was a good luck for me that he find time for interview.
What was your most interesting interview here in Munich?
Oh, for me, I think the most interesting, it's hard to check one, but I like military topics, so the most interesting for me was an interview with a General Breuer.
What do we take from Munich back to Ukraine, and what will you do next?
First of all, I will make a video from a Munich conference, and I want to say thank you for YouTube Studio that I have this chance, because I exactly know if I will not be like successful on YouTube, and if I will not have my YouTube channel, I will never be there. Thank you for this opportunity, and it was a first time when I met with such high-rank people like Kaja Kallas, General Breuer, Mircea Joanne, and our Minister of Foreign Affairs, Dmytro Kuleba.
Amina, we thank you for coming to Munich. It was great to have you here. We wish you really all the best for you, and especially for Ukraine. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Das war die Sonderausgabe des YouTube Creator Podcast Meine YouTube Story. Mein Name ist Ralf Bremer, Sprecher von Google und YouTube in Deutschland. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören bei dieser Ausgabe von der Münchner Sicherheitskonferenz.